Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. Today's guest brings a wealth of information on leadership and personal development. He is the co-author of three influential books, including Triple Crown Leadership, which was a winner of the International Book Awards, and it was co-authored with his father, Bob Vanarek, and Life Entrepreneurs, which is a call for integrating our life and work with purpose and passion. His writing has appeared in or been reviewed by the New York Times, Business Week, Entrepreneur, and others. His name is Greg Vanarek, and I think that you'll enjoy meeting him. Greg, thanks for joining me today.
Great to be with you, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been so looking forward to this conversation. I guess to kick us off, would you mind kind of telling us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I work in leadership and personal development. That's my work. I'm married, so we've got two daughters, 14 and 12. So I'm busy with being a father and try to be an active, intentional parent as well. I'm actually from Southern California, moved around a lot, studied in London for a year, and then my wife is from Sweden. And so we just got back a year and a half ago from an adventure, Bobby, of living in Europe for 10 years. And but now we're back in Colorado in this beautiful part of the world. And so my work, I do a kind of a portfolio of work of training workshop facilitation around personal development and leadership. I do teaching at various universities, executive and master's mostly. I'm an author of a few books and do a little bit of consulting and coaching. And I have a background across public, private, nonprofits, and very deep in the education space and in all different elements of K-12, adult education, everything in between, you know, higher ed, et cetera.
Very cool. So 10 years living over in, was it in Sweden the whole time or was it just all across Europe?
Yeah, we were living in Sweden. And so mostly there, we had the chance to do a little bit of traveling for work and family fun while there. But it was really amazing to be, you know, out of my bubble, our bubble, experiencing a different part of the world, a different culture, a different language, just a different way of experiencing life that was really, just hard for me to fathom going there, how much of a learning experience it would be.
Yeah. How'd the kids like it?
Yeah. Well, they loved it. You know, they were born in Colorado, but we moved there when they were 3 and 1.
Oh,
so,
boy.
You know, they didn't really remember, you know, growing up here. And so they, you know, they pretty much grew up over there. We would come back and, you know, we lived in a small town, not far from the family farm where my wife grew up, that's been in the family for over 100 years, out in the countryside in the beautiful forests. And so that's, you know, for me who grew up in the suburbs and moved around a lot around the U.S., that was also, you know, a really good experience, but a wonderful place to raise children. The Nordics are a very family friendly, safe place, very progressive, very thoughtful, a very high standard of living. And you know, and I would commute into Stockholm on the train and do my work there and come back. And so it was, just a real family adventure that I think really, you know, and now coming back here, they have a chance to kind of experience the United States and North America, a different way of looking at the world. So we're hoping that that will be a very positive long-term experience, although, of course, it's difficult with these transitions.
Absolutely. Are they liking it so far?
They are. Yeah. It's, I think it's been good for them. They've been challenged, socially, different education system, leaving behind friends, making new friends. And then there was this thing called a global pandemic that hits, as well, that has been, it's been tough on everybody, truly. So, we've been dealing with that too, but we're very proud. They've been very resilient. Children show us, resilience and adaptability. That's just truly astounding. And so, we're very proud of them.
Yeah. It's very inspiring, Yeah. And you mentioned the three books. What are the three books?
My latest book I wrote with my father and my dad, Bob, actually, were co-authors. It was Triple Crown Leadership. And we used the horse racing metaphor to illustrate what is your leadership quest. And so for us, the Triple Crown of Leadership is what kind of leadership does it take to be number one, excellent, number two, ethical, and number three, enduring or sustainable. So the three E's of excellent, ethical, enduring is a triple crown. Amazing experience working with my dad on a big book project. We interviewed leaders around the world and some amazing organizations. My previous book was Life Entrepreneurs, and it's about integrating our life and work with purpose and passion. So can you be the entrepreneur of your life who takes ownership of your life, who takes action according to your values and your purpose and your strengths? And that was a very inspiring project. I co-authored it with Christopher Gergen, who's a friend and former colleague. And we interviewed some inspiring business entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs, and all life entrepreneurs. And my first book was an education book. It was about charter schools. And is there an opportunity to renew public education through the social entrepreneurship of, people coming together to start new kinds of innovative schools?
Wow. Those are, those all sound interesting. Some similarities, yet you've got some diversity in those topics too.
Yes, yes. I've had a diverse background. I worked at a think tank. I worked at an education reform foundation. I worked at a high growth online education startup that became the market leader. I've worked as a teacher in higher ed and an author. And so I really like to have fun and mix it up and try new things.
Yeah, I love it. And of course, to fit, it fits perfectly with this podcast, the life entrepreneur. So I really want to dive into that more. I guess, what were your main discoveries from that book?
There's so many. So we interviewed 55 people about their life path, their work, their choices, their failures, their regrets. And that was really amazing to have the opportunity to kind of witness people's stories. I think we don't do that enough, even with people that we think we know well or we spend a lot of time with. And so one of the great themes was that the path is winding. We think it's important to try to get clearer about your purpose and to really discover your values and have a sense of a vision of where you would like to go in the future. But the way one of the interviewees described a vision to us was it's not necessarily a specific point on the horizon that you definitely have to get to. The point isn't about that point. The point is having a direction that says this direction is right for me because it's true. It coheres. And, so one of the themes that came out of it was what we called authentic integrity. It's being true to ourselves, living a life that coheres to our true essence. And there's an integrity to that. And so the point is not arriving at a destination and then saying, I've achieved success and I'm done. We're never done. It's always this unfolding, but it's helpful to have a direction. But sometimes that direction is a false one. And, we've chosen it for reasons that aren't going to hold up anymore because things have changed or we've changed. And so we need to pick a new direction. And that's fine, but there's kind of a drift there that's a danger. So the path is winding, you know, it's not linear, I would say. And then, you know, just part of the whole idea is intentionality, Bobby. You know, and I know you talk about sort of authoring your own life, and it's, you know, whatever metaphor we talk about, entrepreneuring our lives. You know, as a writer, I love the authoring our life metaphor too, you know, but it's the same idea. It's that, you know, we can be acted upon. There's so many forces and there's so much opportunity to be passive or to just go with the flow or to say, no, I'm going to choose. I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to try. I'm going to risk. I'm going to venture. I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to fail, but that's okay. But it's my life, and not mine in a selfish, narrow way. I mean, it's a life that you give to people that you love and to community and to causes and to God, or, you know, the spirituality, if you have a spiritual inclination or essence, but something greater than yourself. And that's, you know, that's where you get into purpose. So those were some of the themes that really that came out in that work.
Yeah, I love that. There's so much there. The authentic integrity. I made a note of that when you were talking, you know, and picking a direction, because I really believe in the direction. Like, does this seem true?
Yeah.
Anything around, you know, in terms of how does someone know if it is true? You know, if it's authentic integrity, how does someone know that?
Mm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I've had the opportunity to be part of some kind of small groups, men's groups, and other, you know, small group facilitation around crafting your life and work and other things. And I heard someone describe it with a simple test. And he said, if you think about your life or what you're doing, does it fill you up or does it drain you? And I love that test. And it's not to say that every day you're going to have a fill me up kind of day. I mean, that is not life. I mean, life has its ups and downs, and it will wallop you sometimes, as well as just amaze you with, you know, beauty and grace. But if you have enough days in a row where it's just draining and draining and draining, you know, pay attention. You know, what's going on there? Do I have a bad manager? Do I not have a values fit with this organization? Am I sort of done here and ready to move on because I'm not being challenged? Is this toxic? Or, you know, do these people drain me? And so I like that test. There's other tests that I like to do. You know, there's good life tests and these kinds of things. But listening to the voice within, I think there's a lot of wisdom in our inner voice. And I think our inner voice gets drowned out. Well, first of all, there's a lot of negative self-talk. And often we have we're brutal on ourselves with our judgments and our critiques of ourselves and others, our judgments. But also we get so busy, we get so invested in checking off our to-dos or just, you know, being, you know, getting through things and meetings and being, you know, that, you know, but surely that's not the point of life. It's not a series of days where you're just busy with stuff, you know. It's to kind of zoom out and look at the big picture and see, you know, what would be a good life for me and for us, and what would hold up looking back, that I would be proud of it and not have so many regrets of the choices that I made.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that, the role that margin or the lack thereof plays into this. Because to your point, I think so many of us are just, we run at the red line. And when we're there, there's no white space. And how do we even hear that inner voice or pay attention to what drains me or what fills me up? It's stunning to me how often that happens. I mean, is that kind of what you see as well?
Absolutely. And that's been a derailer for me. That's been one of my personal struggles, is sort of not maintaining, you know. Conceptually, I get it, you know, and I love it, but I'm not always as good about maintaining enough margin in my life where there's enough white space, where there's enough reflection time, where there's enough. And this year, more than ever, we've relearned the importance of renewal and resilience and self-care and giving ourselves grace and giving other people grace. And that's, you know, that's common. You know, I work with a lot of hard charging leaders and entrepreneurs and executives. And, you know, I like to work hard. You know, I've got a work ethic, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that unless you let it sort of consume you. And you can get to pretty dark places where it's all about the work And so first of all, you know, if my identity is so wrapped up in the work such that when work isn't going well, I feel terrible about myself, you know, or I get so tired and run down that I'm making poor choices and that I'm, you know, I'm disconnecting from family or from health. And there's research about this, you know, kind of sleep and we make poor ethical choices. And, you know, that's when we're at our worst. And so we're not protecting that margin, which takes discipline, I think, good habits.
Yeah. So I know that this is something that comes up quite a bit with our listeners as well. So I'm curious if you have any tips, because you said that it's something that you have to manage for yourself as well. Any tips on, I guess, managing the margin?
Yeah. So some things that work for me or that I've seen work, I like to bring it into conscious awareness regularly. So if I'm using my Evernote to help me manage my work and things and priorities in different areas, I'll have sort of notes to myself at the top of my key pages or quotes that are kind of reminders of this, right? I like to have visual cues about this. You know, of kind of a picture here, a picture back here that has some special meaning to me or some kind of inspiration that calls me to something. And then I think, you know, routines and habits. And so, you know, I like to think of it as really kind of daily and within days, as well as kind of weekly, quarterly, annual. And you get into kind of a cadence of this where and I like the way the habits researchers talk about the way you sort of, you become this. It's not something that you do. It's something that you are. Now you've kind of grown into that. Do we have a good morning routine to set the day? Is there a good evening or bedtime sort of, you know, this kind of thing? Do I have a nice sort of midday where, you know, for me, you know, an example would be, you know, if I'm not reading, I love to read. And so if I'm not building enough reading time at night or at lunch or in the morning, then eventually I start to go berserk. And I'm like, what's going on? I always realize, oh, I'm not reading. You know, it's one of the things, you know, exercise, et cetera. So some of the cues and the visual thing to get it really in your brain and then build it in. So you've got systems and you kind of rise to meet those systems.
Yeah, that's helpful. And I was kind of chuckling when you said the thing about the picture, because of course I can see the one behind you. And I was thinking about, I shared with you when we spoke before, we recently, well, 6 weeks ago, we lost our dog, Riley. And after he died, we were looking through and we found these, he was a gorgeous dog. And we found this picture of him where he was playing. And Greg, it was like, he was so in the moment. Like he was just out of his mind having fun, you know, and you could just see like he was so in the moment of it. And I have it hanging in my bathroom now. And that's my reminder every day. When am I being fully present?
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
I love that. It sounds like you'd really just sort of reconnect with your heart and that beautiful relationship. And, you know, I didn't grow up with animals. My wife is a big animal lover. She works as a vet tech. And so we've got a ton of animals here. And so for me, that's been a real grounding element in my life to kind of, they're so present, the cats, the dog, you know, the foster kittens, you know, experiencing life in that way of just being in the moment where we can have that monkey mind where we're going to the future, we're going to the past, we're ruminating. And just, you know, such a great lesson nowadays of mindfulness and breath and being present. And, you know, these animals are, you know, that's the way they show up in the world.
Yeah. They don't have to think about it. They just are, you know? So I wanted to get to, I know when we spoke before, we had talked about the common traps that you've seen people fall into. I wanted to make sure we got to some of those.
Yeah. Where to start, because there's so many that all of us fall into. And this has really become sort of a new passion of mine, because I think often in the space of leadership development and personal development, we focus on what you should do. And that's, of course, valuable. But often we neglect the things that are the derailers or that trip us up. And I think those are a lot of great lessons, because these things are outside of our awareness. And so to bring them in. So one of the big traps these days, you know, I would say is burnout. Certainly this goes to what we're talking about, a lack of margin, this kind of epidemic of perpetual busyness and, you know, in a deeper sense of not just the physical, emotional, mental, but it, you know, effects, but the kind of sense of feeling empty and as a state of emptiness at the end of it, to, you know, I'm completely drained. And, you know, I think one I just wrote about this week is drifting, you know, is kind of just, you know, life will throw a lot at us, you know, if you're graduating from school or you get your job or you're kind of working and you've got your responsibilities and mortgages, and there can just be so much there that all of a sudden 3 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, you're like, how did I get here? You know, yeah. Is this what I chose? And so, and it's this kind of drifting along because there's so much pulling us, right? And maybe we're even being productive. Maybe we're even kind of successful in some ways, but it's kind of drifting without a deeper intentionality of saying, you know, here's really where I choose to go and I want to go, and I've worked with people and we want to go there together. And so I think that's a common one. Maybe one more I'll mention just, you know, right now is comparing. There's Robert Spitzer from Gonzaga University talks about the comparative ethic. And he says a lot of us walk around constantly comparing ourselves to other people, and we're judging our worth by some superficial things. You know, it's the likes, it's the salary, where do I live, what do I drive, and how do I stack up, right? And this is really baked into our culture here. And so it's you know, when you're swimming in it so much, it's like you're a fish in the water and you can't imagine something else. It can be a very destructive, you know, kind of destructive to your, you know, nobody's the best at everything, you know, and I don't think the point of life is to try to win that comparative competition, right? It's been said that comparison is the thief of joy. And so Spitzer said the antidote to that is, instead of walking around comparing, walk around asking, how can I contribute, and have a contributive ethic, and just say, you know, just simply, you know, can I add value to my daughter, to my spouse, to my colleague, to this stranger here? What can I do, as opposed to how do I stack up? And I think that's a really powerful reframe.
I think that's great. I'm writing it down even as you're talking there. You probably see me taking notes. Because I think it's true. And I think that with social media, it's even more prevalent.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's a whole generation growing up swimming in this so much of this kind of, you know, and there are great benefits of socialization. And, you know, I love social media. I use it actively for work and fun, and I can connect with people around the world, and, you know, there's funny and you can just relax. But there's also a real danger there of, you know, being famous for being famous, and this kind of the influencers for kind of, you know, reasons that are debatable, where people get, you know, caught up in it, and you can really feel pain or disconnection if you don't get what you were looking for with the likes or the reactions, and you can misread these things. And so we've got to learn to navigate the real world and the digital world, and, you know, pull those together. This isn't going away. This is going to continue exploding. So we've got to figure that one out.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Well, I had a guest, this was several months ago, and she was talking about it. And she said, you know, on Facebook or Instagram, whatever, you know, we see the party, but we never seen the hangover. You know? Yes. And no one, I was out cross country skiing right around the time I had that interview with her. And it was this idyllic spot, right? It's up here where it's beautiful. And it was a mother and daughter, and the daughter is maybe 15, 16. And they snapped the picture, right? They took a selfie, and I thought, oh, that's going to be on Facebook for sure. And as soon as the picture was over, they started fighting. And I thought, that's the part we don't see on Facebook. So it's not even a fair, my point is, it's not even an accurate comparison.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And of course, we know that conceptually, you know, we know that there's a curation of kind of your Instagram life or your Facebook feed, but part of our brain, it's easy to get deceived, and actually we know it, but we don't actually know it, you know, and you just can fall into this trap of kind of, you get these snippets of life, and our brains tell us a story about, oh, that's the way somebody's living. And I get this impression. I can have an impression of an old friend and that they're doing great, but they're deeply suffering with somebody. And, you know, they don't want to share that to the world on this particular channel. And, you know, how would you know? And so it's very deceiving. So mental health, you know, children, you know, at any age is just, it's just such an issue these days. And the social media is one sort of one placeholder in that whole, equation.
Yeah. I loved how you put it there too, you know, that how can I contribute? You know, how can I add value? Where can I add value? I think that's great. With the first one, you mentioned the burnout, the busyness. What can someone do? How can they avoid that trap? Or if they don't avoid it, how can they get out of it?
Well, to me, you can sort of go deeper with all of these traps. And so I think that there are many traps on one level. And, you know, I think about what are the kind of mega traps that you know, are kind of a core explanatory factor in all or most of them. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this, Bobby. But to me, ego and fear are some of the underlying core, whatever you want to call them, mega traps. So if you go down the list, you know, there's a bunch of other traps too, of kind of postponing your happiness, conforming with other people, you know, pretending to be somebody you're not. But at the bottom of that, so ego is a complicated subject. And to a point, ego is a good thing in the sense that, you know, we need to have some confidence. We need to take care of ourselves in the world and have a good self-image and self-talk. And so, of course, but it's this kind of focus so much on ourselves and what I want and what I'm going to be and what I'm going to do and I'm going to be successful and whatnot. And so I'm putting on a mask to show how good I am or how successful I am, or I'm curating that, right? And so that gets us away from serving other people or connecting with other people or just being with other people or just savoring the world, because I am, you know, on this thing where I need to conquer the world or I need to be on top. And, you know, we can, and so that's a driver of this burnout, right? And of this busyness and of this comparison. It's about me and what I want, you know. And, you know, this is part of, I guess, the journey of adult development and human development. I mean, we all start with this focus as children, and more, I think, as we get older, we can shed those layers of, like, you know, it's clearly not just about me, right? You know, like, come on, we need to get real, right? And so the other one then is a fear, you know, it's a fear of not being loved or not being loved enough or of not being enough, right? Or not being good enough, or fear of, you know, looking bad, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, and we all have these fears. That's part of the human experience. That's part of the way that we're wired with our brain stems and literally the evolution of our brain. And fear can be good in certain situations. And I can use that to, you know, to react to certain things that are, you know, dangerous or whatnot. But living in this state of fear of, so I came across the work of Tara Brach. She's a writer, and she wrote about, she called it the trance of unworthiness. She says a lot of people are walking around in what she calls a trance of unworthiness. I am not enough. You know, I am not good enough. You know, who am I? And, you know, we don't see it because people are, you know, they're good at hiding it. You know, people wear masks, but, you know, a lot of people that, you know, right now they're struggling or they're suffering with something. And they're hiding it, or they're, you know, only sharing it with some people. And so there's some fear there. And so, you know, we have to learn to kind of work through the fear and not let the fear inhibit us from being who we really are, doing the things that we really want to do. But that's a tall order. I mean, that's one of the big, big tests of life right there, in my view.
It is tough. And that gets back to the, you know, the truly being authentic, you know, because it is kind of like, I think it goes along with vulnerability. You know, if you admit, well, maybe I don't have all the answers, or I don't have maybe all of it together the way that I sometimes seem, you know, when you're talking about the trance of unworthiness, that reminded me, because you're right, our brains are already always chattering to us, right? And sometimes I just started this. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's an app called Healthy Minds. And it's developed by, it was a neuroscientist, and it's funded, I can't remember the university that funded it, but so it's based on science. And one of the things that he talked about was that our minds, our brains are always telling us stories. And the problem is that the stories are not always true. You know, and that's what it reminded me of, Greg. Like, you know, so they're just, and he likened it to a crazy sportscaster who can't stop talking, you know, but we've got this chatter going on that it is kind of like a trance because I think sometimes we don't even notice it to the point where we can challenge it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I've been really fascinated by the brain, the human brain, and the way that we think. And, you know, so books like Thinking Fast and Slow and all of the research on heuristics or shortcuts that we take and rationalizations and biases, it's just an exploding work that explains so much. And so learning about how our brains work and how they deceive us. You know, I mean, our brains are amazing. I mean, the creative capacity of it's just incredible, but they're also, you know, just they've evolved and things have changed so much culturally, technologically, that there's some sort of tripwires there. And so learning about our brains, and also you said it really, really well, which is that our brains think in terms of stories. And so the stories that we come across with media, social media, and that we tell ourselves are very, very influential. But you're right, they can be deceptive. And so that can take us to some really, some dark places. Yeah. But it also takes me back to, and so fear is part of this brain response. And we've got this physiological, you know, the stress and the heart rate and the sweat glands, all that's going on. And so it's easy to be reactive with fear and to kind of pull back. I mean, our instinct is like, you know, danger, danger, you know, conflict, you know, put, and so you have this instinct to pull back. And so how can we learn to push through anyway? And so this is another sort of theme that I've learned is sort of the importance of kind of courage, you know, courage, not being the absence of fear, but the kind of feeling fear and doing it anyway, because you found something worthy of, you know, fighting for and risking for. And so, and part of that courage is taking action in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's trying something new, or it's speaking up in that meeting, or it's, you know, coming back to that family member when there's been this break and trying to make an offer of peace and putting yourself out there, even though you know you might get slammed, you know, whatever it is. But you've got, you know, so it's got to be action oriented to kind of get you back in the game, as opposed to, you know, I'm out of here. You know, I was burned. I'm out of here. And you know, where's that going to take you, right? If you're always just out of here, right? You know, we need people to stay in, you know, and just keep working.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the courage is in the action, right? And sometimes those are small actions. Yeah. And I think that people think that courage, or sometimes I think we mistake it, that courage is reserved only for like the big events, you know, and sometimes it is as simple as speaking up in a meeting or reaching out to someone or, you know, risking being rejected, whatever that might be. Yeah. But it's nothing, like you said, nothing happens unless we try.
Yeah. I love what you just said there, Bobby, because I couldn't agree more that it doesn't have to be about this big thing all the time, right? Those are great too. You know, hopefully we'll have some some opportunities for those, but the little things, you know, being faithful in the little things. One of the things we talked about in Life Entrepreneurs that we learned from these people inspired us was what we called pervasive service. And it's an ethic of contribution as a defining feature of our lives. And, you know, you make the point there that it's like helping others or adding value or contributing. It can just be checking in, you know, how are you doing? It could just be listening. It could just be doing the dishes for somebody. It could just opening a door, like having, you know, saying, are you okay? You know, as well as the thing where you make them dinner every night or every week or whatnot, and you show up, you know, the deeper things too. And so, but you've got to put yourself out there, you know, it goes back to what we said earlier about habits. You become the kind of person who looks for opportunities to just do good things or to add value, you know, to your workplace, to your manager, to your team, to your spouse, to your pets, whatever it is.
Yeah. When you were talking there, Greg, you said, you know, it could just be listening as one of the examples. And yet, oh my God, how many people truly feel like they're ever listened to? You know what I mean? Yes. But
But it kind of brought it back to me. It tied it together a little bit from when you're talking about the fear and then putting yourself out there. This was years ago. I was at O'Hare Airport. And it was one of those days where it seemed like, you know, every flight was delayed or whatever. And I ended up sitting at this counter where I could get a sandwich. And there was a guy next. Well, he came in. And just by the way he walked in, I could see this guy's having a miserable day, like a miserable day. And that voice inside my head said, should you notice? Should you ask how he's doing? Or is he going to think that you're nosy? And I thought, well, the worst that he can do is say, it's none of your business. So I'm like, hey, tough day. And he's like, this is the worst. And what happened is he had just lost his job. They closed down the office. And he's like, he'd have to relocate his family, and his kids were in high school. And he's like, we're not doing that. And he said, now I got to go home and tell my wife about this. And he got his sandwich to go because his was the one flight on time. He's probably the one person praying that his flight was going to be delayed. So he got his sandwich and he was getting ready to go. And he turned around and he walked back and he put his hand on my shoulder and he's like, thank you for noticing and saying something. Mm. And it was so funny, Greg, because in that moment, I felt like it was such a big risk, you know, like, and really, what's the worst that can happen? It's not that bad.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, there's so many lost opportunities because you're just kind of, oh, it might be a little awkward. I'm not sure. And so we just pull back, you know, we don't say it. But those little, I mean, sometimes maybe it would have been meaningless. I mean, like, I wouldn't care. Maybe he would have been rude, but maybe it actually might mean something to him. And those little moments of dignity or just shared humanity, they're out there all the time and we're just missing them left and right. And so it's such a shame. And so just to be a little bit more present, to be a little bit more attentive, to be a little bit more intentional, kind, thoughtful goes a long way. Goes a really long way.
Yeah. A really long way. Mm. You know, yeah, that intention. One thing I wanted to ask you about too, because I was in your TED talk, if I remember correctly, you had talked about like the climbing and climbing and climbing. Is that a little bit related to what we're talking about?
It really is. Yeah, that's another something that's really interested me lately because I see it more and more. You know, I do a lot of work with young people and early career masters and early executives. And it's this notion of kind of the point of life is to climb the ladder, and we really have to point out that there's some nuance here. Climbing the ladder is not bad per se. There's real value in climbing in your career or in the things that you want to do and having goals and working hard, right? You know, I can learn, I can grow, I can develop, I can earn some money, and then it gives me margin, right? And freedom, and I can, you know, go nice places and I can give back, or I can do a startup later. I can send our kids to college, you know? And so, you know, and there's a sense of satisfaction of kind of climbing and being challenged and tested, right? But there's also this notion where if we get so caught up in climbing that, you know, that's kind of the point. And we sort of, so one of the people we interviewed for Life Entrepreneurs, Karen, I interviewed her at age 60. And I said, Karen, you've had an amazing run, real estate, banking, philanthropic involvement, community, board, you know, house in the mountains, family, you know, parents, working parents. I was like, wow, you know, how does it feel? And she said, exhausting. You know, she said she just spent so much time climbing, and you'd get to one point on the ladder and it'd be like, I was so focused on that for 5 years and I got there, and I'd be happy for like a couple days and then be like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And, you know, I heard somebody say recently, like, one of the secrets that few people ever discover is that if you get to the very top and you open up the treasure chest, like the treasure chest is like, it's empty in a sense, you know, it doesn't, you know, fill up your life and make everything okay. It's like, you know, it's you learn that you're still a person and you got to have purpose and you got to give back and these kinds of things. That wasn't the point. And so, you know, she said she was living like on junk food. It was like all about achievement and whatnot, but it didn't fill her up. And so it occurred to me that this climbing mode, it's so baked into our culture. And so I like to think of discover mode as a nice kind of complement. It's not a replacement. It's not to say climbing mode bad, discover mode good. But discover mode is, you know, who am I? What am I good at? What do I value most? What do I get lost in? you know, and this kind of this inner work of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And then we iterate between discover mode and climbing mode. And, you know, it's action, reflection. It's warrior, sage. And you're going back and forth between these modes, right? But if you're just in climbing mode, you may very well realize the ladder has taken you to a place that, you know, that's not a good place for you. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you burn some other bridges that are really important aspects of life too, in addition to that, the climbing or the career success that you have.
And I like that the treasure chest at the top is empty. You know? And what goes on it is all the things that we know that we should be doing along the way. Yeah. But the climbing, it does. Like, we can get really caught up in that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think especially if we go back to what you said earlier, without the awareness, without the intention, we can find ourselves, you know, just kind of some point where we're like, how do we get here?
Yeah. And I think that's really the way that our schools are kind of set up, you know, especially if you go to, you know, you focus on high schools, maybe, you know, are you going to work? Are you going to go to college? You go to college, or, you know, what job, you know, what internship are you going to get? Are you going to go to graduate school? Are you going to, you know, this kind of thing? And so for a lot of people, there's this sense like the whole point is you're supposed to climb. That's what you're supposed to do. And the winner is going to be the one who climbs the furthest, the fastest. And Clayton Christensen wrote about this. He was a Harvard professor who wrote not only about disruptive innovation and the innovator's dilemma, but he wrote, well, my favorite book of his is How Will You Measure Your Life? And he said, he talked about, you know, he went to Harvard Business School and, you know, he would come back to reunions 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And, you know, these are some smart, ambitious people, wired, you know, they're networked, you know, hard workers, ambitious, a lot of, you know, but he noticed that a lot of them, you know, would have profound regrets over something that happened in their family or their marriage or a break with their own children or their health, and they're losing touch with their friends. And it's a pretty outcome. So he's like, what was the theory of their life that they were operating under that caused these brilliant, talented, smart, ambitious people to get to a point where they had deep, deep regrets or pain, in some cases, that could have been avoided? And I think a big one is this kind of climbing mode expectation. That's all there is. And so, you know, again, there's nuance there. You know, there's value there, but there are other things too. And point is, what do you choose? You know, what's a good life for you? Because your definition is probably going to be different from mine. And, you know, there's that diversity of all of us and how we view the world and experience it.
Yeah. And I think that what do you choose versus I'm putting together a course right now and I'm talking about, you know, leaving out the shoulds, what other people tell us it should be, or, you know, because it's a decision that we have to make for ourselves. And sometimes I think that can be hard, right? Because it takes the reflection and it takes the being aware and the intention and maybe the courage to say, no, this is what I want. And maybe it does differ than what other people in my family have done or, you know, whatever that might be. Yeah. And that can be hard. Or I don't know if it has to be hard, but it has to be reckoned with.
It does. There's a reckoning certainly for our choices and whatnot and sort of, you know, blazing our own path. But I think also, so we're choosing, but we're also submitting in a deeper way too. We're submitting to a relationship or a family where we're all in it together. We've got to make sacrifices for each other. It's not just what I choose. It's, you know, it's got to work. It's submitting to, you know, a workplace or a community or to a faith tradition or to a higher power and a deep, you know. So there's choice and there's will and there's action, but there's also a kind of a, you know, back to this, it's not just about me, kind of a recognition of, you know, is there something that I feel called to do or a larger wound in the world? And even that there's a wound in me that I can, you know, where I can give back and I can submit myself to that and a discipline of making sacrifices for it. And so that's back in the realm of purpose, right?
Yeah. I think that purpose can be tough in terms of, you know, because sometimes people are like, well, I don't know what my purpose is. I mean, have you ever heard that?
Absolutely. And I would agree that purpose is, you know, do a lot of work around strengths and passions, and these can be tough too. And it's not just one passion, but I would say that for purpose too, that my experience is that purpose can sort of unfold more deeply as we go through life. There can be, you know, we can learn more about it. And it's this ongoing process. Again, it's reflecting, but it's also bumping up against the world and taking action and experiencing, you know, ups and downs. That's going to reveal different aspects of my purpose or more depth about my purpose, I think. So I've got to be action-oriented. I can't just sit around and sort of, you know, I mean, some people are lucky and their purpose just hits them over the head or they were just born with it. But my experience is that most of us struggle quite a bit with purpose definition and that. And we're not patient with it. You know, we don't sit with it and live through those questions about purpose, right? We got to go. We got to know. We want it to be, you know, simple. And, you know, and it's just not. I mean, maybe at the end of the day, it fundamentally is, but our journey there is wildly complex in some cases.
Yeah. Once we get there, it seems really simple.
Yes, exactly. You know?
But I completely agree, Greg, where it's like, you know, for me to sit in my studio or whatever and be like, oh, what's my purpose? It's really hard. But if I just think, okay, what gives me energy and how am I serving others? And especially where those two intersect and then just start taking action and let it emerge and unfold a little bit. You know, I think that's awesome. So this has been absolutely fabulous. I knew it was going to be. Thank you so much. But I do want to give you a chance. Where can people learn more about your work? And you, and how can they get in touch with you if they want?
Yeah, so a few places. So I've got a lot going on at my website. And so gregvanourek.com. And so it's Greg with two G's and then VANOUREK.com. And there I've got a blog and, you know, links to, so the TEDx talk that I gave on life entrepreneurs and discover mode. And also I've got something that's pretty new. It's a manifesto on how to avoid the common traps of living that we were talking about. And so I've got a list of a bunch of the traps and some of the trap busters. And so that's a great place, gregvanourek.com. My father and I wrote that book, that leadership book, and we've also got a website over there, and it's triplecrownleadership.com. And I've got a blog over there. And over there, we've got a new resource, which are, what are your leadership derailers? What are the common things that take people off course in their leadership? And then just a couple of others briefly. I'm on Twitter at G Vanourek. And so I do a lot of posting and engaging there. And we've got a Facebook group that's Triple Crown Leadership on Facebook. If you want to get some leadership links and, you know, articles and inspirations over there. So those are the places to find me and our work.
Awesome. Awesome. And your blog on your website, obviously you read a lot. Do you ever do like book synopsis of books?
I do them all the time, but I don't typically do them on the blog. I do them as preparation for the blogs.
Oh, and nice.
You know, so I'm always trying to, you know, learn and grow through reading and through teaching and facilitating. So there's a circle. And I'm always like, wow, I read so many great things from books. But how do I capture some of this wisdom and some of these inspirations? So I'm always trying to kind of mine that. But so I don't think we've done too many book summaries, but I do them behind the scenes for our own purposes, our sort of background work.
I love that because it's true. Like you learn all this great stuff and it's like, okay, what do I do with it? What do I do with it? Exactly. You know, Very cool. Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining me. This has been absolutely awesome. I was taking notes frantically. I've got several pages. So thanks for sharing all your wisdom and insight.
My pleasure. And thank you, Bobby.
I hope that you found that conversation helpful. I know that I was scribbling notes throughout it. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, instead of worrying about having the vision, think of it as having a direction that feels true to you, and then pursue that with intention, awareness, and what Greg called authentic integrity. Number two, comparison is the thief of joy. Instead, focus on contribution. How can I contribute and add value? And where can I contribute and add value? And then number three, the treasure chest at the top of the ladder is empty. And like Greg said, it's not that climbing in and of itself is bad, but we don't want to lose focus on the things and the people and the values that are important to us. My takeaway from that is to make your own choices about what is in your treasure chest and then live your life in a way that is continuing to fill up that chest. And I have to say, it was really hard for me to keep that to three takeaways, three insights. And as I mentioned in the interview, I've been working on our new course, Start Your Future Now. And the more that I work on it, the more excited I am about it. One of the things that I love most about putting together a course, any course really, is that it forces me, in a good way, to codify what I've learned and experienced through my grad studies, through coaching as many people as I have over the years, and through my own life experiences. And sometimes that's a fun and also can be a challenging process, but I'm enjoying it. And as I've mentioned before, we are giving away 5 scholarships to the course for those who are interested. So if you're interested, here are the 4 easy steps that you need to take to enter. Number 1, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts. 2, leave a review of the podcast. 3, take a screenshot of your review. And then 4, email the screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject, Start Program. And again, thank you so much for tuning in to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. We love that you are listening, and we're hoping that you're getting a lot of great ideas and insights, because our mission is to share ideas and stories that help us all flourish and thrive. The end goal is that we can all be the author of our own life. And remember, the pen is in your hand. What will you write with it?